On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
So they're ripping out to their home opener, and it's to the sound of the chicken dance.
Yeah.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat. Now he takes off the shirt. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
This is going great.
This is Tall Can Audio.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into Tall Can Audio number 779. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. Make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening to this one. If you find yourself running a little behind, not quite up to speed on new faces in different places, I would advise you go back and check out episode 776 and 777. Those were with Jeff Viette on the Leafs and Graham Nichols on the Sens, respectively. Help get you set for we may be a weekend into the season, but lots to go. So still worth your time to check out. My name's Matt Robinson here in the studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada, out in the boons of Canada. Rob Christie, what's happening today, man?
I'm loving the fact that it's still light out.
Right,
that's a huge bonus.
We normally record these around 4:30 ish, and there's still, it's not pitch black yet. So,
no, I'm loving the about a half an hour or more of daylight we've gained. So, yeah, just sort of hanging out, loving life, you know.
As the senior member of the podcast, you may be more apt to speak to this. Today would have been Muhammad Ali's 79th birthday. You are not that old. That you would remember him in his prime. But, and I was doing some reading just because, as you know, his birthday kind of rolls around, there's a bunch of articles, a bunch of retrospectives that come up. And I just wondered, did you ever see the movie, the one where Will Smith played him?
I did not.
Man, really good. Really good. And I'm not normally a big Will Smith guy, but he got that kind of speaking cadence down. And we may have talked about this on the pod before as I find myself winding up on it. But, good movie and kind of tells the story. It obviously takes some creative liberties where it has to, but, one of Will Smith's better performances. But kind of what's your, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say memory. Obviously you're not going to have strong, but when you think of Muhammad Ali, kind of what comes to mind for you?
First of all, Matt, I think what you're just to be clear for the good listener, mm-hmm. when you say the senior member of the podcast, I think what you really mean is the guy who's been here since day one. Others have come, others have gone. Rob has been here since day one. That is what you meant, right?
I will allow you to sell it that way.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Then that's how we're selling it.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not that old.
No.
But my earliest recollections are early 80s. Early 80s. And him losing to Larry Holmes.
Right.
That is sort of my, you know, at that point you had the legend, right? Or the myth of Muhammad Ali. And so to me, all through the mists of my early boxing interest, which weren't great,
right,
to be honest with you. But he was this sort of iconic figure in sports. And so to me, I remember that loss and it being on like ABC or CBS or whatever it was.
Sure, yeah.
And thinking, how can this be? Who's this Larry Holmes guy?
Right.
Right. And so that's really my earliest memory of it. Now, if you want to talk about, you know, retrospectives and moving away and out from it. Mm-hmm. The George Foreman, it's really more of a, well, there's the movie about the Foreman Ali fight in Zaire, right? Which is,
The Rumble in the Jungle.
Yeah. Well, I get that confused with the Thriller in Manila with yep. Frazier. And so to me, whatever the one was, it was Foreman and Ali Rumble in the Jungle. That was that's an excellent sort of grab in time when you look at those two careers, right? And it's nice to get a perspective on Ali also through, I just watched, it was on HBO, I think, a George Foreman special.
Oh, yeah.
And so it sort of contrasts a good portion of his career against Ali's later career, right? So, fantastic, right? To think of that man. And, you know, it's sad to sort of see him.
Yeah.
I think it was Atlanta.
I was just going to say, that's sort of maybe my last memory of seeing him do something really public, right? He would make other appearances. You could tell he wasn't well. But 96, when they have him light the torch at the Atlanta Games, he did. You could tell, right? This had taken a toll on him, and he wasn't well. And I still think it was awesome that he had that opportunity. I thought it was a great choice, and more now than I did then. At 13 years old, Atlanta rolls around. What the hell do I know about Muhammad Ali, right? But in retrospective, you go, that's an awesome choice, right? For somebody to do that. But you kind of looking back on it, you're like, it's kind of sad, right?
Right. You want to look at going back to after his Olympic gold in 60, I believe it was. And he's a heavyweight, but mm-hmm. he looks like a cruiserweight or, you know what I mean? Like that's a heavyweight sort right. of, you know, he doesn't have that big.
Doesn't look like the modern heavyweights.
Right? He does not. Right. And you look at him getting in there with big men and he's just doing his thing and so much flair and pizzazz. He was a showman, right? He was one of those original,
sell a fight, right? Like
the kind of, and the kind of guy that professional wrestling back in those days would pull from, right? Yep. You're like the styling and profiling kind of thing, right?
Well, and he loved wrestling for the same reason, that over the top stuff. And there's a book out there. I think it's called Inoki versus Ali that I read years ago when he goes to Japan to kind of take part in this weird kind of shoot spectacle, wrestler versus boxer. And Inoki immediately hits the ground and just starts trying to like kick up at him and stuff like this. And we've had this conversation when it comes to what would happen if a boxer got into the octagon today versus the other way around, which we saw with McGregor versus Mayweather and things like that. But like Ali was one of those guys. He was willing to try anything and he loved the wrestling for its over the top kind of showbiz style of it. And we're going to talk a little bit more fighting here. We got lots of hockey to get to as well. But before we go any further, I should ask you, we heard you crack something there a minute ago. What was that?
I'm drinking it's called Normopathy from the Rorschach out of Toronto.
Okay.
It's a Pilsner.
Right.
And so it has a nice, it's light, it's crisp. It's got a slight hint of lemon, I would suggest, but just very, very slight, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of an echo, but nice, easy, clean drinking beer. Normopathy from Rorschach.
Okay. I am into made an order on Friday from the Ridge Rock Brewing Company, and they showed up nice and easy. It's the first time I've been back to them in a while. I think it was over the summer, probably was the last time I had that. This is, the Little Tile Mosaic DDH IPA.
Okay, look at the double dry hopped.
Yes.
IPA. From Ridge Rock.
That's right. So they have, according to the description here, kind of a rotating, they try a bunch of different double dry hopped IPAs. And this is the latest one. Like I said, it's called the Little Tile Mosaic. And I guess the mosaic part of it is these mosaic hops, mosaic American hops that they're using. So this is supposed to be, a little citrusy. It's got some peach to it by all accounts. So we'll see what that's all about. It's a 6.9 ABV.
Well, and it's interesting because that was on back in the spring. I think I looked at them late spring. I pulled in some of their stuff. I didn't love a lot of what Ridge Rock had going.
Right.
But That was one of the ones I tried when I was still under the impression that maybe I would like the double dry hopped, right? Or the Imperial IPA, those sorts of things, before I really found that, you know what? Not really my deal. Mm-hmm. I do remember taking that down. What's your thoughts?
It's juicy and it is citrusy, like they said. And I don't know if this would be the higher ABV or the double dry hop part of it. When they call this juicier, and stick with me because I'm not sure if this is the right word, it's thinner than other juicy IPAs, right? Like where some of them are like, that's juicy. To me, that means it's almost thick or, you know, whatever. This is still tons of flavor, like really good, but texture wise, there's something thinner about it. And I don't know where to kind of place that, but not too bad at all. And I don't know if it's the higher ABVs that makes breweries do this, but this is obviously a smaller can, a 355. So maybe they figure that's about all you need at that ABV. I don't know. So I brought two of them in. We'll see, but hey, man, I don't mind it.
I don't need you to tell me what I need. Give it to me in the big boy can and I will be my own liquor license control board, right?
Yeah.
Let me be the one in charge of this.
Exactly.
It's the difference between drinking a little juice out of the can or the glass, like a breakfast juice, mm-hmm. versus the little squirt of something juicy out of your Bubblicious or Hubba Bubba,
sure,
right?
Sure, maybe.
That little, when you bite into that and you get that ooze of juicy flavor, right? That's where I think it is, right? In terms of your thinness and your...
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, that is, they like to give you a little bit of that to take away some of the bitterness, I think.
You referenced when we were talking about Ali there, the you know, he fought, I think you said Holmes on ABC or CBS. And I found that interesting because yesterday on Saturday afternoon, the UFC appeared for the first time on ABC. And as part of the opening, they threw to one of their reporters and referenced the multiple times that Ali fought on ABC. And they had both the Rumble in the Jungle and the Thrilla in Manila on ABC. And when we sit and look at big fights like that now, you think pay-per-view, but it wasn't a thing yet in the 70s. Yeah. Even through the early 80s, you know, the very first couple of big things that happened in the early to mid-80s was closed-caption TVs, right? You'd have to go to a movie theater or something, and they would have the thing for you, but you couldn't just order it at home. So a lot of these big fights back in the day like that happened on ABC, and they got all the way up to... you know, kind of the late 80s, even the early 90s, they had Tyson a couple of times. But by then you are moving to pay-per-view. I was intrigued to see the UFC's first foray onto ABC happen this way, only in the sense, and for those who don't know, you know, corporate synergies and all this bullshit, ABC and ESPN, and ESPN currently holds all the UFC rights, are owned by the same company, that is the Disney company. And
makes perfect sense. Pocahontas.
Sure. And so I was a little surprised, not that ABC would get a crack at it, because that makes sense to me. Why don't we try this? Why don't we see what it looks like on network TV for these fight nights and see how they do with the bigger audience than what ESPN has? But I thought they might do it in the typical kind of 10 o'clock, even prime time slot, rather than a Saturday afternoon where you got kids watching, and ABC, you know, not that far removed from the Saturday afternoon Disney classic, right? Like, you kind of have a different demographic. And so I was just, I guess, a little surprised by the timing that maybe they would have grabbed a different card somewhere else, you know, maybe more late into the evening. I don't know if you caught the fight or not. It was a great card, but any thoughts on them trying again? They did appear a couple times on Fox while they had that... deal going on, but this is the first time on ABC. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, and it's funny you talk about the, you know, how all big fights, all big things, Super Bowl, your bowl games, your big fights,
yep,
you know, your World Series, those were all on cable TV back in the day, right? And you talk about Tyson. Yeah, I remember seeing, and it felt like it was somewhere in the afternoon, again in the afternoon, seeing Tyson knock out Trevor Burbick.
Right.
Like an 18 or a 19 year old Mike Tyson. Right. Mm. So at that point, again, you're talking about big fights on regular TV. And so I did not catch it. But to me, if you hearken back to 03, 04, I remember seeing Randy Couture winning a fight, and it was like on TSN, but it was on at like midnight.
Okay.
Right? Like you could watch Blue Nui somewhere else, or you could or you could turn over and you could
probably
watch
why this. I miss Couture.
Yeah, exactly. You could watch this bare knuckle fighting thing that was happening, right? And that was so that but that was on a sports network late at night on a Saturday when, you know, for sure all virginal eyes are not on it.
Yeah.
Right. And so as it's continued to move, you know, the launch of it on Spike and as it's worked its way through to ESPN and you said Fox, but now on to ABC, that is to me, this is the other end of the arc that Dana White had in mind.
Yeah.
When he signed with Spike in 05.
Normalize this, 04. Mainstream this, right?
Totally gradually bring it out of the shadows into the mainstream, that this is no longer human cockfighting, right? Where, you know, you're in a tent on a Indian reservation somewhere in New Mexico, right? Where you're bringing two guys, two come in and only one walks out. Yes. Like that kind of thing, right? You think about the early UFC pay-per-views, right? With the gladiator, right? And then the music coming through and the guys getting all, you know, the concept of two enter, one leaves, right? That was what the sport was built on. But as it's transitioned away with the regulations, with the rules and you know, the oversight by fight committees, this is the end goal. This is the same as your ski jumper and your gymnast, whatever. You're going to have your mixed martial artist on a Saturday afternoon. Wild world of sports, baby. That's what this is.
I agree with you. I got to tell you, though, I'm still surprised, and maybe you didn't touch on it there, or maybe you just disagree with me. If you were ABC, like, would you have not expected the late night one first, or just whatever, if we're doing this, let's go and well, throw it right there at 3 p.m.?
Do you think there's any coincidence that ABC's launching this on divisional series NFL weekend?
Yep, trying to hold their own. And also, just a week before Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier, right? It's going to be one of the biggest cards of the year next Saturday night. So ESPN and their ESPN Plus pay-per-view that's carrying it there, they would have a vested interest in, you know, a week before. Let's see if we can get some interest there. And I got to tell you, I don't know whether ABC is going to love this or not. As a fight fan, I loved it. Last night's card, or yesterday's card, was spectacular for finishes, like just knockouts, head kicks all over the place. And as a fight guy, you're like, yes. As a mom walking into a room watching her 9-year-old son who's flipped over to ABC, what is it? Maybe you don't love it, right? Like, I think if you were trying to sell this to people who might enjoy fights, it was probably the best possible outcome. But in terms of the calls you're going to receive on Monday morning to your switchboard, maybe it was less ideal. Like, as a company like ABC, to me, it's fascinating, the whole dynamic. I really thought they would have tried the late night one first and then, you know, one last step before the mainstream arc. But here it was, 3 p.m. And like you said, going up against football was worth a shot. But it did catch me off guard that it was going to be an afternoon card.
Did you, so that 9 or 10 year old who's likely turned off Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto to
never
to move over and
wait? Yeah, no, fair enough.
You get punched out and you're like, oh my God, cover my eyes and clutch my pearls.
Yep. It's true.
And so to me, I think the idea that, you know, me watching Opie and Andy or whatever it is in the afternoon and you go, hey man, after this, what the hell is that?
Right.
Two guys in their underwear punching each other. That is very bizarre, right? I just think, yeah, if the parent is that concerned, that parent is much more closely monitoring what their child is. And I'm not sure what that says about society.
Right.
You know, oh, go sit in front of the TV and, you know, I'll call you for dinner in 2 hours or whatever the deal is, right?
But even so, if you're a parent who's blocked all the channels like that, but left ABC because that's family entertainment, it'll be fun to walk in. Oh my God. Right. Like, it's still, yeah. I think this is the last step, but it was fascinating to me. And like I said, you mentioned you didn't catch it. The main event, man, Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. Max Holloway sets a new record for significant strikes landed at 466 strikes. Ooh. in the first three rounds, they were both throwing them. Holloway was just killing it. But Cater kept coming and kept coming. Somewhere in the fourth round, he gets his nose smashed, and now he's kind of out on his feet. And Daniel Cormier on commentary calls for it a couple times, like, you could probably stop this any time now. The referee doesn't. And you know, thumbs up to Cater, who just kept coming and standing. He's trying to throw him, but he's not landing. The last two rounds are just Holloway beating the shit out of a guy who's out on his feet. And still throwing punches, and as he's doing it, he's turning and answering Daniel Cormier on commentary because there's hardly any fans there, and he's like, right. You don't stop my fights, like, while he's like just mouthing off at the commentary benches.
Only I stop my fights.
Right, so, like, it was extremely entertaining, and Max Holloway, who's already the number one fighter at 145, like, this was unreal, and he didn't do anything to hurt his stock there. And like I said, if you're trying to sell this for what it is, it was awesome, right? Like, ABC, if you're trying to get fight fans back involved or new fight fans, like, this was as exciting and dominant and, like, physical. You know how it gets, right? Sometimes people are pushed up against the fence for, you know, 16 minutes or whatever happens there.
Yeah,
this was killer as a fight fan. So thought it was really interesting, and it does. It sets them up nicely heading into next weekend when Connor comes back and he's going to fight Poirier. And not a bad way to set up.
And the thing is, and your mixed martial art, you know, purists aren't going to want to hear this, but the reality is that time where you go back to where the two rules were no groin shots and no eye gouges, yeah, right? Those were the two Wimps. Rules. Yeah, right. And then there's no head stomps, right? And then you start to add in these things, which was still allowed in. I can't think of what the Japanese one at the time. Pride was still till it ended was still allowing head
Savage,
stomps.
Savage,
like,
man.
Wow, man. But as those rules have continued to come, and it's no longer the fight till it's finished, right? You need in these situations, and I didn't see the fight, right? But we have seen fights where the referee is there to save sometimes the fighter from himself.
Yeah.
And if you look at this and go, that guy, God bless him, he's got an engine and he's got a pile of heart.
Yep.
But that's the kind of thing that is going to...
And his nose is beside his ear. Like...
Yeah.
This is
that's
done.
Not normal,
right?
Who knew that's not normal? Yeah, that kind of thing, right? And so, if you want to continue to, if you want to be on ABC at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, you need to do a better job of those things. And again, if you don't like that as a fight fan, then yeah, you got to stick with your pay per views and your late night viewings.
Yep. No disagreement there. Interesting outing. Like I said, tons of physicality, tons of spectacular finishes. So if you were looking for that, it did do a good job of selling it on ABC. If you didn't love it, you were never going to love it. And so you move on. We will move on. Lots of hockey to get to, but a second anniversary, if nothing else, as we move to the hockey side. This is the 25th anniversary of the first ever game played at Canadian Tire Center / Scotiabank Arena / Corral Center / Playdium. You had, if I recall, you had split season tickets with somebody early on in the days of the Senators. Were you at the first game at the arena?
I was not. Somehow I obviously got botched. Like I was not at that home opener, air quotes,
right?
In terms of, I was not there. I think they lost that game.
I could have done more research. I just saw some.
Yeah, no. Well, I heard it. I heard it just the other day.
Yeah.
And so I think they lost 3-0. But anyways, neither here nor there. I was not there. But yeah, I did have. It was actually split half seasons.
Right. Okay.
So we had, but they were beautiful, beautiful seats. And I've talked about this before, but they were right at 306 on the corner. I'm row 3 on the aisle.
Nice.
So when you come up the stairs, bam, I'm right there. Seats 1 and 2 in row 3. You come down the stairs, bathroom is there. Beers of the World is right across the aisle. Like, honestly, that is best seat. So on the corner, elevated, bathroom and beers, bang, bang, bang.
That's loved gorgeous, it. Eh? We split, same thing. We would buy 14 or 15 games a year from some people we knew who had Leaf season tickets. Same thing. This was straight up, literally, like right behind the broadcast cameras, it felt like, right? Like you were getting the TV view, but from in the arena. So we're maybe 10 rows up on the second deck. Same thing. On the aisle, you go down. On the right was a Tim Hortons. On the left was a beer stand. Right across was the men's room. You're like, fuck yeah, right? Like, couldn't have been any better. And just past the little beer stand on the left was, you know, your hot dogs and popcorn and stuff. So prime real estate. You've been to a bunch of shit at that arena. If you were going to pick one, I think I know the answer, but the listener will probably enjoy, and maybe I'm wrong, but if you got one memory of something you saw live there.
10 rows back on the floor seeing Motley Crue.
Okay, I'm shocked, honestly.
And I'm lying. I did see that concert, and it was the first half of the set was all stuff from Too Fast for Love, Shout at the Devil, you know.
So what year is this?
Theater of Pain. 20.
Can't be long after the arena opened.
No, it was. It actually was probably anywhere between 05 and 2010.
All right.
I want to say. But so the first half of the show was awesome, right? They played all the golden era Crue stuff, right? But yeah, about 10 rows back on the floor. perfect, right? Awesome. But no, I'm kidding. It's clearly the Canada-Russia semifinal 09 World Juniors.
Yeah, the Eberle game.
The Eberle game, right? Which is the, you know, Ellis pulling the puck down at the blue line, getting it to Tavares, Tavares to Eberle.
Yep.
Backhand past Jalobniak. Look at that, man. It's now we're in January and Rob's dropping it into regular conversations.
Yes.
But if you wanna, and longtime listeners have already heard that story, but like it to me was,
well, where are your seats?
I am in the last row, like up on, but on the corner, like 327.
Oh, really? I had it in my head like you were down really low.
I was, but the very top. As I said, the handicap bathroom was right behind me. I could put my coat right behind me, but I was there with at the time my 9-year-old daughter.
Right.
And so, but it was that moment where like it was bleak, right? Mm. It's that moment when you're on your TV where you're like on your couch watching it at home and you're like, ah, fuck.
Yeah. And that whole game though, right? Like every time you'd get one, they'd get one. Like it just felt, ah, come on, right? Like,
but it was, you know, that moment you see in movies and whatever where, you know, total strangers are hugging and high-fiving. That was that moment. Like I've never been at another sporting moment where complete strangers were like sharing this moment.
Right.
So to me, that's an easy and it's a given, but if you want another one, I look to the game where Yashin made his first game, had his first reappearance with the Islanders. I was at that. I was in really sweet seats in the 200s on the corner, which the 200s are the best seats in the house to me.
I've sat there a few times. That's a nice spot.
Yeah. You and I sat there for a couple of Leaf games.
Yep.
They're elevated, but they're not too high. It's just, they're the best seats. And the Sens beat the Islanders. Yashin's in the penalty box when the Sens score the go-ahead goal to win the game. And again, the place is going not Eberle type, you know, but it was raining down on Yashin, right? It was fantastic. So to me, those are a couple of serious highlights that I've seen in that building.
The one that stands out for me is it would have been 2013, maybe, that the Women's World Championships were here, and went with a couple of friends. We bought the only reason we got tickets as good as we did to the Canada-USA game, and this was the round robin one, not the finals, was because we bought a 2-pack. And so you got to go see, I think it was Switzerland-Russia at like 2 p.m. And I can remember we took the bus out and then had to hoof it because they weren't running like the actual event buses yet. And like you walk in, that arena looked like, at the time we walked in for that early game, like it was just us and the people who worked in the building as you were coming in the front door, right? Like, and it was maybe 800 people to watch the game. It was sad, right? And that game ended at 5 o'clock or whatever, and they were going to open the doors. And so we were kind of walking around, like, do we have to leave and go somewhere? And one of the staff told us, if you go over here, there's like one lounge that's allowing people to stay. Like, if you just go buy a beer or whatever, like, we can probably handle that.
We can quadruple that. Is that possible? Is there a bathroom close by?
Right. So they didn't make us leave and check back in and everything. And so we did that. And then we stuck around, and all of a sudden for the second game, Canada USA, it wasn't sold out, but it was probably 15,000-16,000. And we had the same awesome seats, lower bowl, maybe 8 rows up. And it goes to overtime. It goes to a shootout. Canada comes back from 2 goals down to get there, and Canada wins it in the shootout. And again, it's not on the Eberle scale, but that shootout, like, and the people I was with, it wasn't just us. Like, it was all the way down the row and across. Like, you can see people have like their arms around each other's shoulders as the skaters are going in, and then people are jumping and hugging as Canada did end up winning it. And it was Poulin who ended up getting the winner, of course, because she does that everywhere. So we weren't there for the gold medal game, which, you know, that tournament is remembered for. The Americans did win it, but that to me is about as much fun as I've ever had in that building, right? And I've seen the Leafs there a couple times. They were trash at the time. You know, I've got to sit in cool seats a couple of times, like down really low, and accidentally, I think I've told the story on the pod, accidentally buying seats in I think they call it the Bell something. Like, you're right behind one of the nets and there's a lounge and a bar in behind. We just bought last second tickets on the Ticketmaster resale thing, and it was obviously somebody who had turned their season tickets back in or whatever, and we just happened to end up with them. So that was kind of cool, but it'll be always for me that Canada USA women's game that I saw there. And then we went even once to see, I think it was the 2015 or 17 World Junior tune up there.
Yeah,
Aho was playing for the wrong Aho, but the Swedish Aho. Yeah.
And they also had De La Rose was on that.
That's
team.
Right. Like, yeah. So
who is this Jacob De La Rose guy playing for Sweden?
But some cool stuff, man. And I saw the second last Tragically Hip show right before Kingston. They played here in Ottawa and was out at that 4 rows back, 2 rows. I can't remember. 2 or 4 rows back from the stage on the floor, and that was pretty cool too. But those are the ones who stick out to me. But 25 years old, man, they're already looking to replace the thing.
See, and it's funny because people think about, oh, how great, and you're talking about that Russia, Sweden, whatever that, or Switzerland, whatever that semifinal was, or game that you were there for, and it's empty.
Yeah,
it's for a while. While Lansdowne, now TD Place, was going under renovations, for the Red Blacks return and whatever else, the 67s were playing out of Scotiabank. I think it was Scotiabank at the time, and so you would have to trek all the way out there for a 67s game, and so clearly that's far away from their central fan base, and so yeah, you're talking about, you know, a small junior crowd at that point, 1,500, 2,000, and you're sitting in great seats.
Sure.
But there's zero atmosphere. It's completely antiseptic, right? Yeah. And the team was bad at the time. And so you're like, oof, this is terrible, right? And it's got to be hard to play in that, right?
Oh,
where you
I
come
can't
out
imagine.
And you're in this cavernous building and there's nobody there, right? And so,
well, I can remember during that, go ahead, sorry.
No, and the team is bad, so it's not even like, hey, the 1500 to 2500 people I have here,
yeah,
are completely jacked up because the product is so good. No, the product is shite, and the people who are there are like sleeping and wishing they were somewhere else.
Yeah, I can remember it was Finland, Switzerland that we saw in the afternoon, and I can remember my buddy Ty saying at the time, like, because the second division was playing out of Nepean Sportsplex. So for people not from around here, that's not even the OHL building. That's just
tier two.
Sure. And he said, like, you'd be so much better off now the schedule doesn't allow for it, but at least this same 800 people in that tiny rink might have felt like, you know, if somebody clapped, you'd actually hear it, right? Like, it's not this huge cavernous whatever. So the Canada USA game that was absolutely rocking with 15,000 people in there, and just a couple hours earlier, man, a thousand people, whatever it was, at most, it sounded just dead and depressing.
Yeah, no, and that's you have to be venue appropriate.
Yep.
Right. I think that's such a big thing. Like when the juniors were here, Canada's division was playing out of the CTC, and the other division at that time was playing out of TD Place,
right?
Or Lansdowne at that time, whatever, right? Yeah. So yeah, it held 10,000, and so if it had 4,000 in it or 5,000,
sure,
it feels pretty good,
yep,
right? You know, it's a junior crowd, and so then you continue to move it in, and I think most places have done that. Like when I went to the 03 World Juniors, the Canadian division was playing out of Halifax, sort of, so it's a 10-5 arena,
mm-hmm,
right? And the other division was playing out of Cape Breton, home of the Screaming Eagles,
right?
So again, a much smaller junior arena in a smaller location,
right?
And so I think it just makes better sense, right?
Sure. So 25 years in, and for a few years now, they've already been talking about trying to move downtown. That is a fast turnaround for a building that there's a ton of other factors that go into it, especially the location or whatever. And I've said this before, as a Leaf fan, that building inside is nicer. Everything outside sucks, right? It's hard to get to a bar. It's hard to get there. It's all these things. But they have the nice wide concourses and these big selections in terms of, you know, you can go get an organic meal over here, or there's like what do they call it? Like the Carve House or something, where
the Carvery.
Right. And you know, they do some really nice stuff in there. It's just, as opposed to the ACC, where the concourses are super cramped because you're trying to occupy this very small piece of land downtown. The arena in near Ottawa inside is gorgeous, and I wouldn't be looking to turn it over yet, but everything else about it, yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, and to be clear, they're not abandoning that arena because it's antiquated.
No.
Or it's exact, and to me, there's not a bad seat in that place. As I said,
it's high. Some of those high ones, it can be far.
But the ACC,
for the exact same reasons, has not a bad seat in it because there's no room to be back too far. But
right. But I've taken in a Sens Habs game at the Bell Center.
Right.
And I was in the last row behind the Habs net. Right. Mm-hmm. So the net that they play in 2 to 3 periods. And man, if you look down, there's a little bit of vertigo going on there, right? Like it's super steep and super high, and you felt further back. Now it holds 22,000,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, it's high. I agree with you, but I didn't feel bad sitting in that last row on the corner. It was still beauty, sight lines, everything was, you could pick up all the numbers, no problems.
Right.
So yeah, they're looking for a more central locale.
Yeah.
One that's easier for the Gatineau side to get across the bridge to, more central for your east and west end and all the people in the south end. Because for those of you who aren't familiar, Ottawa runs along the river east to west. It's relatively shallow north to south.
Yeah.
Right. It runs along the river. And so if you're right in the middle, which is where Le Breton was, where they're planning on putting it, sort of just west of the Parliament buildings. Beautiful location. it'll be on, you know, public transit. The new light rail goes by there. Everything about it is just like boffo. But Huge can't get his shit tight. So we're still playing out of this decent arena that nobody seems to want to make the trek to.
I suppose as long as we're talking about the Canadian Tire Center, we might as well, as we transition into the NHL, hit on the most recent two events that went on. Leafs and Sens split a home and still home series that...
home and never left home.
Right. I wanted this has nothing to do with the games, but the first thing, and I mentioned this on Twitter... the Sens do their on Friday night. It's their season opening game. It's their home opener, so they're going to introduce all their guys. And all these teams are struggling with the fact that you're essentially skating out to crickets. So you're trying to cover it with music and fake crowd noise and all this stuff. And I thought that was fine for the Sens. They handled it as well as anybody's going to. And then I was immediately, like, when the Leafs came out and John Trache, the new in-arena announcer there, who's taken over for Stuntman Stu, he goes, and now welcome tonight's opponent, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the first thing, I have a tweet half written that says the cheap ass Senators couldn't even invest in a boo button. And I immediately deleted it because, frankly, the fact that they made the Leafs skate out to complete silence was way funnier than any piped in boo sound effect. You could hear the sound their skates were making on the ice. The guys aren't talking. And you and I, we both attended a game in Malmo years ago now.
It's exactly where I was going.
Okay. And well, why don't you take it then? Because to me, this is the first thing that it reminded me of. It was hysterical.
Because I actually brought it up watching the game here that night.
Yeah.
Was so you and I and a couple of others, when we were in Malmo, we went to see a Red Hawks. So this is the Swedish Elite League.
Yeah.
Right. And so we were there in town. We thought, hey, man, let's check out a Swedish Elite League game. And
grab
so the
pus dog and see some hockey.
Man, a pus dog. Those were the worst hot dogs ever. You know, you squirt, you bite through the little, you know, and honestly, there's shit squirting everywhere. And you're like, this is gross.
Yeah.
But yeah, versus HFK or whatever that is, it was a team we went to see. So yeah, Malmo comes out and they're whipping around. The tunes are pumping. And they said, now announcing tonight's opponent, you know, HFK, and they come out and so they're ripping out to their home opener, and it's to the sound of the chicken dance.
Yeah. Hard to look menacing, man.
This is exactly it. And it's funny you say that, because that's exactly my thought. When they skated out, and you can hear the skate cuts.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, okay. But yeah, I'm glad that they, because to me, as an organization, you don't want to boo the opponents, which is really what a boo button would do, right? Yeah. And so, but
why not? Boo them. That would have been fine. This was better. And I don't know if someone had the foresight that this is going to be crickets, it's going to be hilarious, or just we're not going to play anything when they skate out, and they didn't know how awesome it was going to be. Either way, it was the perfect troll job on whoever your opponent was going to be. And the fact that it's normally an opponent who gets a pretty good ovation in your building, it was hilarious to hear this complete and utter silence.
Yeah, well, there was a tweet out from Steve Warren, right? Good friend of the show, who he said, you know, the Sens will be getting great hometown support from the red tarps tonight, as opposed to the sea of blue that's normally in the stands.
Right. And I saw a great tweet that was somebody else who said, I haven't watched the Sens in 3 or 4 years. I'm glad to see tarp is still there. I guess he hadn't seen a game since they were started tarping off the back few rows at the top.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Larger sections up in the upper reaches.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to tweet out, it's nice that we don't have to get one early to take the fans out of the game. Right. That was also sort of running through my head on the weekend. Okay. This is one of those things. But I think, if you look at what they did in the bubble, before we get into any kind of, if you look at what the NHL did in Toronto and Edmonton, to me, it wasn't bad, but they kind of struggled with the noise was muted a bit. I think for the most part, most arenas have looked at Vegas and what they do with their fake crowd noise that they pump in on every game since their inception. They've taken that and done a better job. I find listening to it, for the most part, to be better than it was in the summertime. Do you have any take on that?
Yeah, only in the sense that I'm not sure. I mean, I think you're right. Every arena is doing their best with it. But then it's up to the broadcaster on how much of that level to add to the mix before you send it out. And I found on Wednesday, it was the Penguins and the Flyers who went first. It was almost unwatchable. It was so irritating, the mix that they had coming out, and it was overpowering, and it kind of sucked. Later on Wednesday night, the Leafs and Habs, even there, I found the crowd noise irritating. I thought they were adding too much to the mix, and whether that was happening in Toronto or whether it was Sportsnet adding too much of it you know, as it's coming into the broadcast. I don't know. I found on Friday in Ottawa when it was TSN, it was a much nicer blend. And I got to be honest with you, I can't really remember. Maybe I didn't pay enough attention on Saturday when it was back to Sportsnet to be able to tell the difference, although I don't really remember it bugging me. So on Friday night, was it TSN who did a nicer job mixing the sound for the broadcast, or was it the Ottawa Arena that had it at a nicer level in-house that made it sound more natural? I couldn't tell you, but I found Friday night's game far less jarring, right? Like far less grating to watch than the Wednesday game.
Well, no, I think it does come down to your in arena production.
Probably.
Right? And if we're going to give the shout out to whoever the game day ops guy is, who's taking care of the Leafs coming out to no sound and the crowd noise being okay, it's also the same guy who's playing Get Loose by the Salads.
Love
so
it,
you know
man.
What? To me, there's got to be a little something going on there, because I heard that you tweeted out post-game and or during the game.
Yep.
I throw my phone away on game nights. I don't look at it during, because I'm always a half an hour at least delayed.
Right.
So I don't want to be in. I don't want to be involved.
Yeah, coming
in
back
that.
From commercial, they played one of our former talking and sports themes. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and so to me that and that's my first thought was, I've never heard it before. Clearly, that's a local listener. Thumbs up to you, guy, whoever you are, because there it is. You're like, that guy's like, Talkan Audio, man. I got to get me some salad. Hey,
we know the horn guy. He listens to the show, and now we know the in arena DJ listens to the show. So shout out
See?
To you guys.
Shout out to both of you for the fine job you're doing, for sure. Now the games, it's to me super fascinating. I was so stoked for Friday night's game with a whole heaping of trepidation, you know what I mean, in terms of what are we going to see here, right? And you, Michaela, talked about it Friday morning, right? In terms of, you know, the whole pile of ifs that are thrown against the wall, right? What is Matt Murray going to look like?
Right.
Right. How is this blend of young and older up front going to go? And what's going to happen with that right side of your defense? Is it going to be, you've gone big and you've gone rugged. Is it going to be slow?
Right.
So there was a feeling in the backup, I believe, of most, you know, aware or woke Senators fans. Yeah, it's douchebag.
It's so condescending.
That you would have this, you know, there's a chance we could get run the fuck out of the building right here in our home opener, right?
Yep.
And so you do have the North Division favorites. No matter what, you can find somebody that says that Toronto doesn't miss the playoffs, that will miss the playoffs.
Yep.
Shout out to AJ Jakubek. those sorts of things.
Knows his audience.
Right? Yeah. So if you look at, but to me, most will tell you that this Leaf team is going to finish first or second in this division. And for all the reasons that we broke down last week, right, in terms of what happens. And Friday night, there was a great big, that looks like the same old Leafs.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of, you know, the defensive coverage and the ability for the Senators to go to the front of the Toronto net.
Mm-hmm.
And have a free parking spot there, right? And be able to battle and do whatever you want and not even have to battle, because, you know, in certain spots, TJ Brody's waving his stick over his head like he just don't care, right? Like, I don't know what's happening there.
He was trying to put his glove back on.
Yeah, I know. Was it honest? Was it on the end of his stick? Like, what is he doing there? I know, and I agree with that. And so, to me, there was large periods of sustained pressure that the Leafs had.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of their, I found their inability on Friday night to really get to the middle of the ice. The couple of times it did happen, I'm thinking about that Matthews shot from like 20 feet out.
Yeah.
Right in the slot. And Murray's there. Murray's in good position and he just soaks that up.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, there wasn't a pile at the Leafs.
Well, I think the Leafs only got four shots in the third period down.
Yeah.
So, and whether it was smothering Senators defense or Leafs inability to whatever, I don't, they didn't give up shit in the third period. And you made a pile of bad passes into the middle. the Leafs did have some sustained zone time, but it was all outside. Yeah. Like, you could not get inside. So I think there's probably a bit of both, right? That the Senators played it well and that the Leafs, whatever, were not performing. I agree with you. On Friday night, it did not look very good at all. And to me, every game I've watched so far, all three games have looked like exhibition games. And there's probably a reason for that, right? For every team, not just the Leafs side.
But this is early season overreaction time.
Yeah,
and you as a Leaf fan, you know that 100% that
I'm being driven off my own Twitter timeline.
Yeah, it is now. Well, that somebody, I don't know who it was, they tweeted it into my timeline. It was a non-Leaf fan who was tweeting in this. Somebody saying, this is fucking brutal. Get rid of Anderson. This team is shit. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Night two, like, man.
Yeah, team two, for sure. And you go, that guy's allowed 9 goals. And I had a conversation with our Matty Lang. And I'm saying, I think there's an argument that in games 1 and 2, Anderson may have been the better goalie in both those games. He's just not getting a lot of support in front of him.
Yeah, I saw the... See, I don't think he was great on Wednesday, but I don't think Price was great. So who was better? I don't know, right? Saw it off. On Friday, I thought one was a tip or a deflection. I think that was Tkachuk, if I remember correctly. The one that there was another one, like I said, where he was left completely out to dry. But there's one or two where you go, oh man, like I gotta have a save there, right? Like, kind of same old. Is it because it's training camp, or are we seeing the continuation of lackluster Freddie from the second half of last year? I've just committed myself pretty hard to, for at least 5 games, I'm not gonna react much, right? Like, I'm. And I know that makes for boring podcast, but I'm just being driven nuts online by the, oh, that's it. Campbell won and Freddie lost. Campbell should start on Monday. I don't care. Maybe he should. Like, I got no problem if there's going to be a you win and you stay in thing. I'm okay with that. But Campbell also only saw, like, what, 17 shots or something
19 shots.
And he was pretty good with them, but Freddie saw harder action and with a worse team in front of him. If that's enough for some people to decide, then I guess, go off. But
see, and the thing for me is between Friday night and Saturday, what we didn't see on Saturday night, like you look at the step on goal on Friday night, there is 3 or 4 black jerseys all
good
on the
looking
blue
black
paint.
Jerseys, by the way. Those are looking real nice on the
they
ice.
Are super sweet.
Yeah.
But you have there's an absolute fiesta happening around the blue paint, and you have entirely too many guys in there. And the Leafs cleaned that up between Friday night and Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know, Campbell was not exposed to some of those things where, Freddie looks like he's swimming a bit, but there's shit happening all over him.
Yep.
Like, to me, it's far be it for me to defend Freddie Anderson, but to me that is, and if you have Riley and Brody going a -7 combined, they may not go -7 combined the rest of the season.
Right.
And so to me, it was just so indicative of the Leaf play. And I think
did look uncomfortably familiar.
Yeah. And so to me, that was the takeaway was, it was more Leaf driven. The end result was more Leaf driven than Senator driven on that night, despite how CBC and TSN would have you believe that it was, the Senators were the better team on that night. I just think it was
Wayne Simmons didn't punch enough pucks into the net.
Yeah, well, I love Magician on Friday night saying, if Wayne Simmons has got to get into a fight every time this team needs to get fired up, he's going to have sore hands by the end of the season. And that being said, as we transitioned into Saturday night, and so the Senators only had 20 or 23 shots on Friday night, and then 19 or 20 on Saturday. Hey, man, that's not a recipe for sustained success. Nope. And so I don't care who you got in net. You could have Mikko Koskinen in the net. You're not winning with
just the side elbows on the way by.
you're not winning many games,
right?
With generating only 20 shots, and this is now the time, and I want to be the first guy on board saying we need to fire DJ Smith right now because Because his defensive style of game isn't going to help us transition as we move the talent in. I'm just saying. I don't really mean it, but I do want to be the first on record.
Okay. So while the Leaf fans are going off at three games in, here's a Sens fan going off two games in.
Yeah. And really, I understand that they're looking at that this is the decor you have made.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have to play this way, yeah. This is it. And you have to do this. You have to play this way to help prop up your decor.
Yeah.
That's NFG. And so I don't want to see that moving forward. Right.
I will say that those right defensemen at the end of that home, whatever, that two game series have less wind burn on them than I expected going into that series. Like I expected some of those Leaf forwards to just like,
yeah,
I'll see you, man. Now,
right,
in a couple cases, you were seeing Josh Brown give a little, right? Like, and start further back, turn a little sooner, especially when it was Willie on Friday. He had got burned a couple times early and whatever. I thought Willie was actually pretty invisible Saturday. But you know, whether they just played it a little better, I expected the Leafs to expose that a little bit more, but you know, that they held their own, I guess. There was a lot of talk that for 2.5 periods, Toronto dominated Saturday. And as far as shot attempts go and possession and stuff, you could make that instance, but at no point did I really feel like that's what I felt like. The Matthews line was dominating and the Kerfoot third line was doing pretty good and everything else was just kind of there. Right. And being sawed off. But the Matthews line buzzed almost all night and they're going to need that.
Well, and that's a guy, Matthews, to me, if you recall, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 6 weeks, 2 months ago, there was a Twitter poll, you know, who are the top four centers in the NHL?
Yeah.
And they asked for four and I gave them five because I can't count. I meant to give them four, but yeah, to me, Matthews is solidly in that top four now.
Yeah.
Like to me the killer for me is his work in the dot.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think his, and they can put him out to kill penalties now comfortably because I don't know what his numbers are, but anecdotally, he seems to be cleaning up in the draw.
He's very good on the draw and he's become Datsyuk like. He's not Datsyuk, right? But in terms of coming back, taking it away, right? Lifting sticks, he's become pretty good in his own end, right? Very responsible. And so I do think they like him in kind of that Fogo face off, get off kind of situation. So only because, like, and Keith has said he's going to kill some penalties. But in this regard, I almost agree with Brian Burke. Like, there was a shot taken in one of the intermissions of Matthews being the guy who's supposed to charge Shea Weber, who's teeing it up. And I'm suddenly going, fuck that. Like,
yeah,
where's Wayne Simmonds or Barabanov or somebody else get out and do that? I don't need Matthews trying to block that. And quite frankly, Matthews showed he had no interest in blocking that. And I was fine with that. So,
yeah,
I guess it depends on the situation. I think it's going to be a lot of, like, we saw it once last night. Matthews comes on with 20 seconds to go in the penalty kill, takes the draw, win it, get out. And now he's ready to, you know, if somebody's coming on.
Well, that's just good.
Yeah, management.
Whether it's your power play or your penalty kill, right? If you go, man, we're down to 15 seconds left. You go set it up so that we have the most,
right,
the easiest transition into running your lines back together. Like it just makes good sense. But all I'm saying, and it's not news to any Leaf fan, but yeah, there's some grudging admiration for the fleshing out of his full game.
Right.
Right. In terms of how good he can be in the 200-foot game. Right. And so all we need you to do is really to be that 170-foot game, if you want, of tracking back, taking pucks away.
Yeah.
Right. And working forward. If you're not great, you know, from your own dots to the boards, whatever, right? You're a 50 goal scorer. We can live with your good spade work in the draw.
Sure.
and forward. So yeah, to me, that guy is really taking his game forward and it's super noticeable. So,
anything else on these two games?
Yeah. Just, I think the game that they played last night, the Leafs, that is, if they can continue to transition that, and as you said, again, they had between actual, they had 40 shots, 39 shots. Yep. There was over 20 block shots.
Yep.
And then however many that were directed at the net that didn't hit the net. That aside, you know that team is going to score okay. That's not going to be the issue. I think the power play has the potential to be, you know, well, like it was before, top two or three in the league, right? So right. I was surprised. Were you surprised by how much time Wayne Simmons plays? Now, I think he may have been in single digits in minutes, or if not, it was 12.
Yeah, it was low.
To me, he seems to have a pile of power play time, and I'm like, that's where I seem to hear him the most. And if it's net front presence or whatever's happening, to me, that guy, he's a momentum killer.
Yeah, there's he's right now on the number one unit with Thornton, Matthews, Marner, and Riley, and he's supposed to go to the net. In the first game, he had an opportunity or two. Since then, it hasn't been as great. But yeah, he's playing fourth line minutes and then number one power play to kind of be the guy out in front. And you balk at this all the time, but they have on their team the guy who scored the most high danger area goals last year on their second power play, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know that I want Willie the net front guy. I don't think that holds up, but I don't know yet. You know, I think they're going to keep juggling on this power play a bit. And quite frankly, Hyman is far more used to playing with Matthews and Marner. Maybe he should be the net front guy. But I think they made some promises to a lot of these guys that you'll get an opportunity, right, to be what you used to be. And so they're going to, for 5 or 10 games, see if Wayne Simmons can recapture some of that. And I have time for that. Like, I early returns suggest it's not awesome. It's been fine on the power play, but there seem to be a lot of plays at 5-on-5 that die on his stick.
Yeah, because he's wide and he's never getting.
Yeah,
he's never getting any interior presence.
Right.
But let's be clear on the Willie Nylander thing. Right? Is if that's where he's getting his danger zone shots from, power play, I totally get it. Like, to me, that is, whether it's right down on the blue or moving back into that bumper position, you want somebody with skill, like a TJ Oshie in Washington, right? Like that kind of thing. And I'm totally behind that is where Nylander is best. It's not the 5-on-5 sort of down low area. That's not what you're expecting from him. If it's a power play on a 5-on-4, you know.
Yeah.
Then that's for sure. Let her rip, man. Let her rip. And that's where you should be going.
Like last night, I don't know. I know you didn't catch it at the time. Maybe you did later. But there was during the pregame show, Brian Burke is giving his, you know, views on the world and says, and the other thing I'd change, I'd get Tavares onto this number one power play because this is ridiculous having him on the second. And then David Amper, clearly just transitioning it back to Ron, goes, yeah, the Toronto Maple Leafs, 4 power play goals in their first 2 games. Back to you, Ron. And it was a complete burial of and I howled and I was sitting there by myself and just because I guarantee you Amber had been told Burke's going to comment on the power play. So he looks for a stat before throwing. It's just his transition. He's barely paying attention to Burke. And now it's my job to but he just buried Brian Burke with that.
Well,
Burke's saying the power play sucks. By the way, it's clipping along at such and such. Here you go, Ron.
The idea that Burke wants to touch on the power play. So the last thing you'd expect that they in the first 2 games they have 4 power play goals.
Yeah.
That you're going to denigrate it in any way, right? And so you're thinking, he's going to talk about the dominance of the Leaf power play, 4 goals in 2 games, and you go, okay, so yeah, 4 goals. That's going to be my throwback. And the last thing you expect him to say is, yeah, this is terrible. Why mess with what is working? Like, to me, nobody.
And they have gone to the big boy unit, right? The 5-on-3 against Montreal. They went, I think you're going to see that, right? Like, either late in a period or 5-on-3. They'll load one up for the last 30 seconds or whatever and just see if you can create something. I think they saw it in the first game against Ottawa, maybe. They will use it from time to time. But they do want to balance it for a bit. But you're so right, man, to just I'm sure David Amber looked at it and go, okay, he's going to talk about the power play. The power play is going good, so I'll be able to throw this in. Just a complete fucking drive-by. Yeah.
And I know you want to transition into a little bit of a conversation, but before we get into this, because to me this is panel-esque, you and Michaela last Friday, you touched on the Simmons-Sherratt fight. And yeah. So we don't need to get into whether it sparked them, because to me, your sentiment of, the three power plays that came right after, including the five, the essentially 2 minute five on three, are the things that really tilt the. To me, it was, and I'm not sure if you guys covered this, but if you're Sherratt, why are you taking that fight?
Yeah.
What do you need to do to fight Wayne Simmons? There's a good chance that Simmons is going to cave your face in, and B, you're up 3-1. Like, to me, that's where Sherratt says, I'm good.
Well, and the other thing that's not coming out enough on that whole thing is, if you do watch the replay back, Sherratt had just cross-checked him in the fucking ear. So maybe that's why he felt like, oh, I should probably, I agree
when
with
Sherratt
you.
Drops the gloves first.
No, you're right about that. But if you're going to sit there and you're going to cross-check Wayne Simmons in the head, you should expect he's going to answer you, right? Like, he is still that guy, even if he's not a number one power play guy anymore. And there's no doubt in my mind that the Leafs are happy to have a guy who will do that. But, I don't need to repeat myself from Friday that I just felt like the Habs starting to run around a little bit after that is more what... But you're right. And, there's no reason for Sherratt to open that door and allow the Leafs back in that way. I will tell you that Wayne Simmons beating the shit out of a Montreal Canadian will be a future Heritage Moment commercial that we used to see on CBC. I'm at least in Ontario, I'm down to see that. So.
Yeah. Well, and I'm watching that as an impartial
I hate
viewer,
both these
right?
teams.
Yeah, yeah, right. If short of the score clock falling and crushing both teams. Can we sort of, in that position, right? You sort of go, oh, all right, but in the end, I don't really care.
Right.
But I'm thinking that is, and it doesn't matter. Like, they both traded cross checks back and forth.
Yep.
At the end of the day, Ben Sherratt, do not take that fight.
Yeah.
Move away from it. And it's funny because as we transition to the panel, you had Bieksa and Anthony Stewart on two different sides of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fully down with Bieksa saying, don't take that fight, man. Don't do it.
There was some talk on Friday. I can't remember who it was. Simmons wanted to fight one of the Sens at the very – it was like 23 seconds left in the game. And there was a bit of a controversy, and it depends on what angle you saw, at least on Twitter. There was a couple of videos making the way around of whichever senator and his bug, it might have been Josh Brown. I can't remember for sure. And he's gesturing at the clock or at the score. I don't need to fight you. There's 23 seconds left. It's what was it? 5-3, 6-3 at the time. The Sens were up. Fuck you. Right. I'm not doing this.
Oh, that was Austin Watson.
Yeah, it was Austin Watson. And, it came up on Hockey Night. I think Bieksa was the guy who made the point. He said, I think Watson was pointing at the time more than the score, right? There's 23 seconds left. You still want to do this tomorrow. Let's talk tomorrow, knowing that you're going to be in a back-to-back situation. So I think you're going to see a lot of this stuff as we move through the season.
Were you not surprised that there wasn't more feistiness in these two back? Like, they were pretty vanilla games. Would you agree with that?
I would, but I'm not sure I'm looking at my roster. Super surprised that there wasn't more. We'll see, right? They're going to play each other 9 times. There will be some shit towards the end, no doubt. But I don't know that I, expected a whole lot more out of it than that. I think at this point, the Toronto-Ottawa rivalry may exist more in the minds of the fans than the guys on the team. That will be different by the end of the season. I was as interested... the panel was split on Saturday because they had two early games. They had David Amber take one crew, Ron McLean take another crew. But I was as interested in the play-by-play teams. And on Wednesday and Saturday, you had Chris Cuthbert taking the Leafs slash number one game. And then Hanarayan Singh taking the late games. And for those not familiar, that's the guy who has been calling a bunch of games on Omni, and he's the Bonino, but he calls the games, you know, in... I'm totally blanking now, man. In what's the language?
Punjab.
In Punjab. And so he's put a book out recently. He's kind of spent the fall doing a media tour around the book and just talking about how growing up in Alberta as one of very few brown kids into hockey, what that was like and getting into it. And he did the Nick Bonino goal several years ago for the Penguins in the Cup final, and kind of became internet famous, if nothing else for that. And so I was excited to see on Wednesday that he was getting the late game. And I think that was Oilers Canucks, and he was with Louis DeBrusque. And so I at first was a little, you know, surprised that Jim Houston wasn't on the broadcast at all, but figured we'd see him somewhere Saturday. Before that rolled around, there's a sports media in Canada account that I follow that had suggested Jim Houston has told Sportsnet, I'm not traveling for this, right? This, he may do some Canucks regional games or maybe national games in Vancouver, but he's not prepared to travel multiple times a week during a pandemic, which is legit. But I was hoping, and I'm going to turn this over to you in a second, that my hope had been going into this that common sense would prevail. Chris Cuthbert lives in the GTA. Just give him the Toronto games. Jim Houston lives out west. Give him the Western games. I had no idea they were going to give Hanarayan Singh more of a platform there. I think that's pretty cool. But my kind of distaste for Houston's call likely weighed into my hope that that's how they would handle this thing. But it made sense even in my head that why send Chris Cuthbert out west and Jim Houston to Toronto when you could do the opposite. What did you make of the first couple of Sportsnet broadcasts in terms of the way they've set up the play-by-play?
Well, I'm not a huge Houston guy.
Yeah.
I am. Yeah. Well, and the Hannah Ryan saying the Bonino.
Yeah.
That is really it made famous by Matt Robinson. Right. I'm not sure we've heard more of the Bonino. Every time I bring up Nick Bonino, Matt gets right into it.
That's all I know about him.
Yeah. I was watching the game on Friday night on TSN, and I didn't love the echo and the delay on the call. And that may have been the Cuthbert call on Wednesday night, actually.
Yeah.
He was delayed on it. Right. And so I think they're looking at spacing the whole thing out. I was totally fine with the call itself. Really, anything that has Louis DeBrusque on it, I'm not loving.
Right.
Right. So I think whoever your play-by-play guy is getting pulled down by not so sweet Lou.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's not Jim Houston saying, I'm not leaving Vancouver, that, you know, gave the opportunity to sing. Maybe they were going to do that anyway. Maybe they weren't. I thought he sounded a little nervous in the first game Wednesday, but on Saturday I thought he was better. And I think this is why you have to create opportunities for people to give it a shot, right? And then this conversation was going on yesterday. There was somebody ripping Cassie Campbell in the job she was doing on color during the Flames game. And someone put up a video. Her first ever game on color was with Bob Cole in like 2006 or 7 or something, maybe 2008. Matt Sundin scored his 500th goal, and she wasn't good. But who is in their first game, right? And here we are 15 years later. And to me, I think she's better on the panel, but I don't mind her on color. She sounds more smooth. But you can tell that comes with experience, right? And so it's not going to be any different for Hanarayan Singh, who has been doing this in Punjab for a while. Now he's trying to move into English and give it some time, right? Like,
well, and this is a guy who, as you said, started out in the Punjab coverage and then morphed his way into the sort of pregame,
yeah,
or the in arena host, yep, or whatever they're calling those guys, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. And so in terms of these are, it's the trajectory or the movement of you as a broadcaster.
Yeah.
And so, and
anybody
and,
caught episode one of this show.
Yeah, I heard you reference that a couple of shows back with Michaela too. Brutal.
Stick
brutal
around.
For sure. And the show has gone through, quite a transition.
Sure.
But in terms of, and whether you like it or not, your hockey broadcast is going to become much more the United Colors of Benetton, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that involves genders, ethnicities. You know, the days of this vanilla white panel,
yep,
host, play by play, color, all these things being white male.
Here's 6 hours of 60-year-old white men.
Right. And the reality is, so you can say, you know, that is, you know, we're forcing people of color, women into the thing. The reality is, I would rather listen to just about anybody else other than Brian Burke, and nobody gets whiter than that guy.
It's so funny how I disagree with just about everything he says on their broadcast, but I do find him entertaining. I find him well-spoken. Like, there's some vanilla stuff that happens on these hockey shows. Like, the TSN panel has, to me, which has traditionally been by far the better hockey broad, it's getting a little stale, right? There's some stuff there that I give me more Mike Johnson, right? And Bob McKenzie, I always have time for.
I like Mike Johnson. You need more O-Dog.
I need less Dave Poulin. Yep. Right?
Like, Poulin can go, and I don't ever need to see Pierre LeBrun again.
Okay. Wow. All right. He's grown on me a little. He's not the we used to rank the insiders here and seen where he fell. But there is a bit of transition going on here. And, I still sit here and I say, I love Chris Cuthbert. He's my favorite guy. There he is, 65-year-old white guy. Right. But that's a guy I grew up with on a bunch of different sports. Yep. And so I was happy to hear, and a friend of the show, Sean Fitzgerald, put up an interview with him on The Athletic last week that said, he's also now the Leafs regional guy, at least this season. So I'm going to get an awful lot of Chris Cuthbert, and I got to be honest with you, I'm just fine with that. So
yeah, well, and guy on the show, guy who's been around, and you love that.
Yeah.
It's funny because if we look at the establishment that is Hockey Night in Canada,
mm-hmm,
and Ron McLean, for me, he's a bit run his course for me.
Right? Yeah.
Like, if you look at it, I much prefer the David Amber to the McLean at this point. Like,
right,
McLean wants to make everything a heritage moment. Everything has to be this historical tie-in. You got to do all these things. And
see, that's the part I still like.
Okay. But to me, he gets bogged down on it. And sometimes I listen to the things he says. And there was a couple moments last night where I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, Ron? Like, get on with it. And so to me, I find Amber more in the Duthie mode.
Sure.
Right.
In
terms of these are guys who are going to, they're hockey guys. They're clever enough, but they're going to deliver it to you in a hockey way. I don't need to know how this ties into, you know, Canadian history and the founding of.
Yeah.
The-
you're referring, I think there was one point, one of the things you're referring to was, you know, the history of hockey on the radio / Canada, and the first time the whole nation heard the Parliament Hill bell was, yeah,
23 radio stations,
right?
And now there's 23 Rogers. Anyways, it's you got to work real hard to tie all these things in, and sometimes they're interesting.
Yeah,
I don't ever find, but I'm like, you're trying too hard, Ron.
Thing for me with him is I don't mind that stuff. I enjoy less, you know, the second intermission headlines. Get me back to CJ or Friedge. Please stop interjecting your hockey take into this, right? We only got 3 minutes or whatever it is.
Right.
I don't want Ron's take on it or him editorializing. I just want those guys to give me as much information as they can in that amount of time. So to me, maybe we have slightly different criticisms of him, but I agree. David Amber in the last few years has grown into this role better and better, and that's clearly where they're going. We remember they tried to get rid of Ron in favor of George, and the audience did not care for that either, or at least a certain portion of it didn't. So we'll see where that's going.
That's why you have this hanger on version, which is the Berkey, which you're going to transition that in. And instead of putting Ron in with Berkey, you have Amber in with Berkey, right? To give you the true Ebony and Ivory thing. Cause man, it's like somebody's hit Brian Burke in the face with some baking sugar, you know, some whatever that guy is. Honestly.
And he's interesting, right? Like I like watching him, even though I don't agree with him. I think he's charismatic. I think he's a good speaker. I think he sells his point. And I can sit back and go, no, right? But at least to me, it was interesting television to hear him do it. Or whereas some of these other guys on both networks are just kind of too vanilla. I don't get vanilla from him. And
right, but I find him predictable.
Yeah, no, there is some of that.
And if you didn't say exactly what I thought you were going to say before you started to open your mouth, then that would be really interesting. But the fact that I know what you're going to say,
right,
makes it redundant and you no longer necessary. Just to go further, that's what I like about Bieksa. I think Bieksa could bring a little bit. Well, he's got a bad haircut, but. But to me, he's going to bring a bit of...
That's the haircut you're centering out on the panel, is it?
Yeah. Well, no, it's Friedman with his dye job. I don't care what he says. That hair is dyed, man. But to me, Bieksa has a bit of what Ray Ferraro brings, which is, I don't mind saying what I think I see.
Right.
Right. Whereas some people want to couch it and say, I'm not that far removed from playing. I know what it's like. Like to me, Bieksa brings, and he made a great point on the print media yesterday. Like to me, those are the things where you go, yeah, just give us the quote. But then he's like, no, man, the print takes your quote and they plop it in however any they want to use it.
Yep.
And so anyways, to me, it's thoughtful. It's insightful. And yet he doesn't mind being playful. He doesn't mind being right. Whereas I could lose Anthony Stewart again. To me, that guy brings zero.
Yeah, he's not particularly interesting. The other on Bieksa, a year or so ago, not long after they picked up Jack Campbell, so somewhere around February, the Leafs were out west and they put Campbell in. I think it was in Anaheim. They put Bieksa in as the third man in the booth, right? Greg Millen was down between the benches and they let Bieksa do some color. And he was really good there too, right? Like it was cool to hear his insight, you know, as a guy who isn't that far removed from playing, has some personality, has some charisma. So I think they're still feeling around as to where he's going to be best served. He's been very good on the panel, but he was also very good in that one time that I did get to hear him do color. So I hope he's long-term there. The other thing I did want to get to tonight was the Keith Yandle story. And for those who aren't familiar, I believe he's at 866 consecutive games played. That is currently the longest Ironman streak in the game, has not missed a game. And there was some thought this past week that streak was going to be broken, not by injury or retirement or anything like that, but coach's decision. Maybe he was no longer, you know, going to fit into their top six. Joel Quenneville, not afraid to make controversial moves when he needs to. He's the coach there for the Panthers. As we sit and record this right now, the Panthers' home opener has not started yet, but the media has reported that he will be in the lineup tonight and that Iron Man streak will continue. I'm trying to remember. Is it Harvey who holds the all-time? Is it Doug?
No, and the name escapes me as well.
Jarvis?
Doug Jarvis is who I would have said, yes.
For the Habs at like 950-something. So he's not far off it, but still at least
he's under 100.
Season. Yeah.
but the thing is, you're going to ask me how I feel about you getting sat out, right? Am I right with that?
Or I was going to just ask you on your take on the whole thing, yeah.
On a healthy scratch. Well, last thing I heard, which was last night during the late broadcast, I believe.
So that's Saturday night, yeah.
Yeah, of Saturday night of the Flames Canucks game, which they were saying that he was in, he had taken the practice and he was working first power play unit.
Yeah. And on Sunday, one of the local reporters down there has confirmed he's going to be in the lineup as of Sunday morning. So this could, in theory, change before we get this posted, but all accounts say this streak does continue.
Yeah, and really it comes down to, for any of you out there who are wondering or worrying about what that looks like and should you have your streak ended, and I'm trying to think of the guy's name.
Andrew Cogliano.
I was going to call him Cole Yakubo. I was going to call
Cole had his own opinions.
I was going to go in a bunch of different
His was ended by suspension.
Yeah, by an internal suspension, I believe.
Might be. I don't remember.
It was a Dallas issue where he didn't show up on time or whatever it was, and they suspended him, and he missed, and his Iron Man streak got broken because I think he was ahead of Yandle.
Could have been.
And all I'm saying is, to me, that's ballsy. And if you're Yandle, it's a great streak, and you should be commended for it. But if you're not good enough for whatever reason is, and I have no problems believing, if you look at the last 10 years of Yandle's career, that as he ages, that's a guy who's going to be
34
scratched.
Now, yeah.
Yeah, sooner or later, right, with the offense first, defense fifth, kind of
defense.
Yeah, that Yandle has. And so I'm glad for him that it's going to continue because it's a serious feather in his cap. But the reality is you're not good enough to play. That's what's going to end the streak.
Yeah. Carlo Colaiacovo was one of the he's now on the morning show on TSN 1050 in Toronto, who said Quenneville will lose the room over this. He said, you can't burn a guy like this who has put in that kind of work and then scratch him. And he may be right on that. I don't know what happens in that Florida Panthers room. What I know is some of the takes that are coming out of notable media people around this saying, I can't believe you would intentionally sabotage a streak like this. And I'm blown away that anyone thinks Joel Quenneville is looking to intentionally sabotage his own team. If he thought Keith Yandle was good enough to play and contribute, he'd be in the lineup. Joel Quenneville wants to win. He wants to show he can turn this organization around. And if at some point Keith Yandle was outside looking in, it's because he thinks Yandle isn't his best option anymore. And you can argue all day at that point as to whether or not you think he's right, right? Like, you may think that Yandle is still can contribute and is better than somebody else in that Florida defense. But to say he's intentionally sabotaging anything is ridiculous. And that's a real quote that came out. And if it loses the room, what is the line? Right? Like, let's say Keith Yandle stays healthy for another 6 or 8 years, but is still just awful, but in theory could play. Do you have to keep trotting him out there? Cause you don't break the streak. Yeah, you do. Well, if you suck. Like,
and here's the deal. Which side is it? We talked about it on this show back when they talked about bringing in Thornton, Simmons, Bogosian, right? And what it's like to bring in leadership.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, but if this leadership you bring in is not contributing, how good is that leadership, right? So you have players saying that. You can't bring in guys who are just going to play 10 or 12 minutes and not contribute, and then the young guys go, fuck you, I'm not listening to you.
Yeah, your seventh defenseman and a healthy scratch forward don't get to tell you how to
roll my eyes.
Yeah, fuck you, right?
Like, so you can't then say, I have to trot your underperforming ass out for 90 more games.
Yeah.
Because you are underperforming, but we have the streak going.
Yeah.
Which is it? Like, to me, that is talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Yeah.
And so I think at some point, if you're going to be real, the other guys on that lineup who are saying, hey, man, I want this to be a meritocracy. I deserve to play. That guy is not performing, and I don't want you to put him in the lineup simply because he's got this streak going. So I think if you make it a full-on meritocracy, you play on merit.
Yep.
That will win the room ultimately. And as you've said, you don't win three cups as Joel Quenneville has, and you don't coach, you know, the Blues. Yeah.
One of the winningest coaches ever.
Yeah. You don't become that way by sabotaging your room. Yep. Right. So to me, that's a guy who you say, if I do my bit and I deserve to play, Coach Q is going to put me in.
Yeah.
That to me as an athlete, that's what I want to see. Don't give me this. Oh, well, just keep trotting me out because I got this thing I'm doing.
Yeah. No, and, if you have any kind of fucking pride, you don't want that either as the guy. Right.
Like, right. And it's not like, hey, man, I have 8 straight 30 goal seasons.
No.
I have 10 straight 20 goal seasons.
Right.
Like I'm producing and I have this streak. Don't sit me out. Don't rest me. I want this goal, man. I'm sitting at 27 or I'm sitting at 18 goals.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sit me now for rest. I want to play. The idea that I show up on the ice for one shift.
In theory, I'm that is here. Not,
that is not the same thing.
Right.
Right. And so to me, it's an admirable streak and
sure.
It should be doff the cap. But at the end of the day, it's you have perfect attendance, but you're pulling down a D+.
Right.
Like at well, the end I, of the day.
I wonder how many of those guys that you supposedly might lose the room. I'm a good teammate. Yeah. Keep my guy in there. Keep him going. And then quietly in my own head, yeah, fuck, this guy's killing us. Get him out of here, right? Like, publicly, you have his back, but at some point, let's just let the coach be the bad guy.
Oh, but Matt, you got to sit tonight because...
Yeah, well, okay, not everybody's going to feel... Yeah,
for sure, there's going to be 18 other guys
who may feel...
Yeah.
But guy 20's like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, and just before we deke out of here, and I know you were lobbing that up, you had sent over the whole Pete DeBoer...
Oh, yeah.
And the Vegas not announcing their starting goalie until game time.
Yep.
Right. And any thoughts I had on that? To me, DJ Smith started doing that back in January, whereas he said, I'm not going to announce my starter. I'll let you know. And this whole idea, and I was reading some Vegas news stuff this afternoon saying strategy. It's this strategy of not announcing your starter until game time.
Right.
Because it's going to bamboozle the Ducks or the Avalanche or whoever it is you're going to play, or DJ Smith doing it here. And that came up last week was, you know, one of the first questions in the Zoom thing with DJ Smith was, Coach, who's your starting goalie tonight? Or are you not going to announce that this year as you finished last year doing? And DJ Smith said, yeah, we're not announcing to the media who the starting goalie is. We're going to keep it internal.
Right.
And we're going to go. And the reality is, watch the game day skate. You know who's in the starter net. And that's it. Like, I don't know. So I'm of two minds here, right? Which is, why are you fucking with the media, right? For the sake of it. Because really, it's not like Toronto is going into Saturday night going, are we going to see Murray? Or are we going to see
Hogberg? It's going to be Hogberg. We don't know Hogberg.
Right, like, and you've seen both these goalies, and especially now in the Canadian division.
Oh, man, yeah,
you know all these goalies, right?
Or you will in 3 weeks. Yeah,
yeah, and so at the end of the day, you're going to have a book on everybody. You see who shows up and takes the thing. There's no strategy in it. So to me, I don't get it. I don't get what the big hullabaloo is. Now, as I said, I wanted to make a big deal of it. I'm passionate about it. Like the media, that's the conduit to the fans, blah, blah, blah. You want to do that thing. But then at the end of the day, you're like, yeah, there's no strategy. I don't get what you're saying. Right. So
my take, the whole thing is fascinating only because the NHL continues to creep closer and closer, as they should, to gain any kind of revenue here. They're snuggling up more and more to the gambling industry.
Amen, brother. This is where I'm going.
And the gambling industry wants to know everything. Am I more likely to bet on the Senators with Murray in goal or with Hogberg in goal? And you better fucking tell me who that is. I'm not betting on the Senators to begin with. That said, as hey, a man, coach...
It's a spread issue. That's all you're looking for.
As a coach, my job is to win. And while I don't think it's life and death, that it completely changes everything, I'm not giving the other team any comfort. I'm not going to help them at all. And you're right. 9 out of 10 times, the guy who's in the home end net, and maybe he's the guy who leaves first, is the guy who's starting. But maybe I'm super crafty and I switched them today. And I'm a,
yep.
Whatever you want to do there, there is this weird balance between I'm coaching to win, and so I'm not giving the other team anything. And the other side, which has become, you know, on the NFL, you know immediately who's hurt with what kind of injury, how long they're out, and who's replacing them, because that's good for gambling and it keeps the interest high and all these sorts of things. So I thought it was interesting in Vegas, of all places, that Pete DeBoer was the first, apparently not the first, but was the next to say, I'm not giving you shit. As a coach, I respect him, right? I respect that. At the same time, I'm kind of like, whatever. I don't know what message you're trying to send here, who's doing what, but you know, it is interesting because it kind of is tugging in the opposite direction of where the league is quietly trying to go.
Right. And you've really just taken, the vast majority of my takes.
Sweet.
Which is, if you were the NHL and you are Pete DeBoer, you need to know, as gambling becomes a bigger thing, you look to the NFL.
Yep.
It's not only injuries, it is quarterbacks. It's what's the health or what's the condition of Drew Brees? Is he going to start tonight? Is he going to do all these things? And you go, there's no ifs, and, or buts. Like, they don't mess around with this upper body injury, the NFL. No. They come right out with
lacerated testicle.
Yep, this is it, man. I was bending down to grab a pot out of the lower cupboard, and my kid from behind kicked me right in the low hangers.
You!
It's Patrick Waugh.
Damn it, Junior.
it's so all these things. And so, this idea and this debate, this hot stoving of should we or shouldn't we, it really means sweet fuck all, because as that gambling specter comes down, and I say specter because it's like it's an ominous thing, but the reality is it's the big fat cash coming right down the pipe. Guess what? You'll know who the starter is by mid-afternoon.
Yeah, Gary will be knocking on your door telling you how you're actually going to do this.
This is it. Oh, you think that's the case? I love that. No. And so as you start to put your two hands out to catch all the sweet manna from the sky that is gambling money, you will announce who your starting goalie is and what the exact injury is on these people, right?
Bodog fucking says so.
Yeah, because guess what? That's where the cash is, right? And so do it, man. Do it. Give it to me.
That's Tall Can Audio, number 779 for your Monday morning. Hope you all have an awesome week. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. We'll see you all later this week.
See ya!
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck. It was a disgrace.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.